many activities as they like. And they're practically immortal. Their food is amrita. One who partakes of this amrita, it practically protects one from the dangers of old age and death and all the fears that accompany that. And then amongst the devas, the one who is most exalted is Lord Indra. You're appreciating that I'm very charitable by nature, but my lifespan is so short. What can I do? In the course of my lifetime, it's a speck in comparison to the lifetime of Indra. His lifetime lasts for 71 cycles of the four yugas. So for each of the Manus, when Manu takes over to rule during the 14 Manus, during the day of Brahma, each Manu appoints some Indra. So the opulences and the paraphernalia of Indra with which he worships the Supreme Lord is so vast. And in reciprocation with those opulences, the Lord, or with those offerings, the Lord bestows upon him so many wonderful things. He lists some of those wonderful things. His elephant carrier and his horse, Airavata and Uchashrava, they're generated from the churning of the ocean of milk. Who has horses and elephants like that? I have some horses and elephants, but not like that. And I have some gardens, but he has the Nandanandana garden, which is so wonderful. Nandanandana garden has desire trees that can fulfill all desires. And within those gardens are also the Parijata tree that exists only in the heavenly realm. And he has a Kamadhenu, like a wish-fulfilling cow. We have cows in our kingdom, but not like that. And the capacity of my ruling, I'm a ruler just here in some tract of land here in South India. But Indra, he rules the heavens. So there's a little detail I'll explain. Sanatana Goswami indicates that there are levels of kings. So this particular king was called the Maharaj. So that there's the king is in charge of a kingdom, and the Maharaj rules a few rajas, a few kingdoms. And later on, this king is referred to as Sarvabhauma. So there's two terms that go together, Maharaj or Sarvabhauma. And above that is Chakravarti, who rules a continent. So at that time, when this king that's visited by Narada, Yudhishthira Maharaj was the ruler of the continent, or for that matter, even greater, for the ruler of the planet. I'm just a Maharaj. He is the ruler of, beyond even the continent, of all of heaven. So you should go there and experience one very, very special thing in this kingdom. Is I have a very wonderful deity. I have great affection for my deity. But Indra's deity is the Supreme Lord himself, Lord Vamana, who appears as the younger brother of Indra. In other words, he takes a subordinate position, the younger brother position. And in person, Lord Vamana is there. And he receives all of the offerings personally that Lord Indra extends. Please go there and see. It's such a wonderful place. So, Narada goes, comes in for a landing. at Indralok. And when he arrives, the worship of the Supreme Lord is taking place. And the scene is described where Lord Vamana is seated on the back of Garuda, and his consort Kirti is by his side, and Brahaspati, the priest of the Devas, he's offering wonderful prayers. The great elevated sages, they're praising the Supreme Lord. Indra is seated on a throne by the side of Lord Vamana, and the Supreme Lord, as he's being offered various items of paraphernalia, he turns to Indra and promises, "I will protect you from all difficulties that come by the way of the asuras." And Lord Indra says so many recitations of the history of how he was protected by the Supreme Lord in so many circumstances. And after the whole grand ceremony is completed, Garuda flies away with the Lord on his back and Kirti Devi accompanying him, and they retire to some other place. So Narada is seeing this fantastic scene, plays upon his veena and starts dancing and offering praises to Lord Indra, glorifying him. And as he goes through his statements of glory, he's basically referring to some of the very same glories that he heard from the king. Indra looks at Narada in amazement. And then he says, "Narada, you have become clever like the Gandharvas. You're just mocking me. Why are you teasing me in this way?" So the reference is that Gandharvas, they're known as singers, but they're also known to be very tricky. And they have some powers, and they cleverly deceive the minds of other people so they can do what they want to do. Gandharvas. So they travel freely and you travel freely. You must have been associating with the Gandharvas, because now you're just teasing me. Why are you doing like this? You've prayed, so now he goes through practically item by item the glorifications. He knocks them down. You say that I'm the ruler of heaven. But don't you know what it's like to rule heaven? It sounds like a statement that somebody that's a temple president would say. Or anyone that takes somebody, "Where's our temple commander?" No. You think you're so big, you know, take some position. Once, tell a little story. Badri Narayan, some of you may know Badri Narayan Prabhu. He's our GBC member in Southern California. And I've heard him tell this story about five times. He was walking in front of the Los Angeles temple, and one devotee he didn't know before approached him and said, "So you're our GBC here, so now I know that you just enjoy getting power all the time." And Buddha said, "I just laughed for about 5 minutes." Basically, you have no idea what it means to be a GBC member. It's no fun at all. That's what Indra is saying. Ruling the heaven, you have no idea what it means to be. I'm in constant fear that the demons are going to come and attack again. And yes, it's true. You heard Lord Vamana say, I will protect you from all danger. But let me tell you how he protects me from danger. One time, one big demon named Bali, he came and invaded and took over. He not only took over, but he made his own appointments. All of the other personalities in the heavenly planets, the other persons were kicked out, and he put his own guys in. And so we went to the Supreme Lord and pleaded with him to please give us protection. And you know what he did? He sent a secondary form rather than coming himself. And he just, there was no battle. He didn't like defeat these demons. He just tricked them and took away the kingdom and gave it back to me. I was so embarrassed. And then there was another time at the very beginning of creation when Vritrasura was harassing the planets. Actually, Sanatana Goswami makes reference to the Rig Veda. There's a detailed description of Vritra, where he was making a big disturbance at the beginning of creation, where he was attempted to keep the oceans trapped within mountains. And so it was creating a big calamity. And so they went to the Supreme Lord. And you know how he protected me? He hardly took it seriously. He said, send Indra, he'll take care of it. And when we do need him, we don't even know where to find him. Just like you saw him leave just now, where did he go? Sometimes he goes to Svetadvipa, sometimes he goes to Dhruvaloka, sometimes he goes to see Prahlad in Sutala, sometimes he goes to Dwarka, sometimes he goes to Mathura, sometimes he goes to visit the Pandavas in Hastinapur, sometimes he goes to Vrindavan, and we don't even know what forest he's in. When we need him, we don't even know where to find him. And we don't have the powers to enter into such places because we're just devas, we're not exalted devotees. And you say, I have all these wonderful opulences, like the Nanda, Nanda in the garden. Well, do you know what he did? He took away the Sudarma assembly house, and he took away the Parijata tree, right out of my Nanda, Nanda in the garden. How much does he favor me? And not only that, there's some reference from Vishnu Purana that, no, from Harivamsa, that after he did both of those things, he destroyed my city. The whole big conflagration, and after the battle, he leveled my whole city, my capital city. I'm the recipient of his mercy. And you say that here in the heavenly planets, we're all sinless and situated in the quality of goodness, but I'll tell you the real story. Here, there's so much jealousy and rivalry all the time. And you say that he resides with me personally and he receives all the offerings that I make. The real truth is, he just puts up with me. He receives the offerings because of the affection and devotion of my mother and father, and on the insistence of the priest, Brihaspati. Otherwise, he doesn't care for me. And he just gets up and leaves. And then sometimes he comes back, and when he comes back, he says, in case I'm not here to receive your offerings, you can make the offerings to Shiva or to Brahma, because after all, they're not different from me. And I know the philosophy. They're empowered incarnations of the Lord, but I know the difference between them. He doesn't favor me. Not at all. And because of my reverential feelings for him, I'm obliged to do what he says. So, for all of these reasons, he's deprecating himself and says, but Narada, you should know this, that the person who is really the recipient of the mercy of the Lord is your father, Lord Brahma. And then he recites some of the glories of Lord Brahma. He says that there isn't any other being like this, that he's born directly from the Supreme Lord himself, direct son of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And as far as opulences are concerned, why, there's 14 of us Indras in every day of Brahma. And then he goes through the whole thing, and the day of Brahma is equal to his night, and those days and nights, there's 365 of them, and they go for 100 years. We're insignificant in comparison to Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma, I rule the heavenly planets, but he creates the whole thing. And he creates the rulers of the whole thing. He created me. He put me in this post of Lord Indra. And he's the world's chief protector. When everybody's in trouble, including myself, we go to Brahma and ask him to help us out. And then he has the access to go to Lord Vishnu. So he's far greater recipient of the direct, confidential mercy of the Supreme Lord than I am. And he not only creates, but he also brings about the destruction. At the end of his day and at the end of his lifetime, everything's finished. Even the most confidential thing of all is the Supreme Lord resides with him personally as Mahapurusha. You know that form of the Lord that he saw? He personally sought after a realization of the personality of Godhead, and that form of the Lord, he invited him to reside with him in his planet, and so he agreed. And he's there, Sahasra Shirsha Purusha. He's there receiving directly all of his offerings. Please go at once. And so he does. Off goes Narada to the abode of Brahma. And Narada glorifies. When he reaches, the scene is, there's the Supreme Lord, Mahapurusha, with his thousands of mouths. He's receiving the so many offerings with great opulence that Brahma is offering, and his sons, who are perfected priests, they're multiply engaging in eulogies and offerings and very grand spectacle. And much like in the previous scene, when the offerings are completed, the Supreme Lord retires, and Brahma has his sons continue the yajna part of the festival. And Narada takes the opportunity, comes running forward, and starts reciting some of the same glories. You're the grandfather of the whole world. You're the original spiritual master of all spiritual masters. You're the master of all living entities. You alone create, maintain, and annihilate the 14 worlds. You live practically forever without interruption throughout the whole duration of this universe. You're self-born. This is one of the ones that Brahma doesn't like. When Brahma starts his refutation, he says, self-born. You're glorifying me for self-born. What's that? I'm not self-born. I'm born from the lotus that comes from the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. What kind of birth is that, being born on a lotus? And you say that I'm the creator of everything, but don't you know that everything is being conducted by material nature, prakriti? Prakriti kriyamana nikuna karmani sarvasha. Don't you know that? Didn't you study Bhagavad Gita? And to prove to you my disqualification, the fact of the matter is I'm just arrogant. Because I think, yes, I'm the creator. I'm the spiritual man. I have all these designations that I think about myself. Yeah, I'm the original forefather of all living entities. I'm just an illusion. And because of that illusion, I live in terror of the time of the conclusion of this universe, because then I'll have to die. I'm just being honest with you. I'm in terror of that moment. And as a result, all that I want is liberation. And you say that the Supreme Lord accepts my offerings. He accepts them out of duty, because we know that He knows our desires. And He knows that my desires are like I've just described to you. So He accepts them because it'll protect and preserve the universe, not because it's offered out of love. He's really good at... Brahma's very intelligent, so he knows how to deprecate himself expertly. And then a whole other issue that's very important in all of this business is that the issue of... So one issue is the opulences and how that affects the minds of the devatas. But then their powers of giving benedictions. He says, I'll be more explicit about how bad I am. I give benedictions to demons. And the Lord doesn't like it at all. I gave a benediction to Ranyakashipu. And in turn, he started terrorizing the universe. And the Supreme Lord had to personally come and check him. And when the Supreme Lord came, and I came to offer my prayers, he just looked the other way. What kind of mercy am I getting from the Supreme Lord? And when Prahlad finally pacified him, he called me forward, and he chastised me. It's right in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, Brahma, don't do this again. And you know what? I did it again. I gave my benediction to Ravana. And what sins did Ravana do, even to the goddess of fortune, Sita Devi? How am I the recipient of the mercy of the Supreme Lord? And the persons who I empower is my post as Brahma. I give authority to different individuals who are in leading positions in the universe. But look what I do with this power to make appointments. Indra, for example, he goes and steals the calves of the cowherd boys. He causes rain to try to inundate and destroy the universe, to destroy the residents of Vrindavan. And and Kubera, his very close servant, Shankachuda. Yeah. He went and he tried to kidnap the gopis. And Krishna had to come and kill him. Take his jewel, give the jewel back to Balaram. And practically every single one of them. Yamaraj, he kidnapped the son of Krishna's spiritual master, Sandipani Muni. And very interesting detail is disclosed by Sanatana Goswami, that son of Sandipani Muni is Madhu Mangal. He becomes a very important personality in Rupa Goswami's writings. And Varuna, I point to Varuna, what did he do? He stole Nanda Maharaj, kidnapped Nanda Maharaj on the pretext of not breaking the Dwadasi bathing at the right time. It took him into his abode. Krishna had to personally come. I'm so embarrassed. I'm always making these bad appointments. I'm in charge of the underworld, and the Kaliya serpent came and harassed all the residents of Vrindavan. And it's not just the others. It's I myself. Like just the other day, this most embarrassing thing, worst of all, I personally kidnapped the calves and the cowherd boys. And I came before Krishna to apologize for my mistake. He hardly even paid attention to anything I said. And I was just terrified. I was afraid I'm going to make another big mistake. So I just hurried up and finished my prayers and circumambulated the Lord and left. I was lucky I got out before I did another foolish thing. But this becomes important later. So actually there is one good fortune, and that is during that incident I did visit Vrindavan. So I got the opportunity to see the Supreme Lord with his devotees in their mood of devotion in Vrindavan. There is one good thing. But one who is a recipient of the Lord's mercy is Lord Shiva. And now specifically we want to focus on this matter of his giving of benedictions. He also makes mistakes when he gives benedictions. But when he gives those benedictions, the Supreme Lord always favors him, somehow figures a loophole out of those benedictions so no one really gets hurt, except the individual themselves sometimes. So we're going to hear some of those details with the little bit of time that we have. He's well known. Lord Shiva is well known as the most dear amongst the devas to the Supreme Lord. And not only he has far more opulences than any of us, but he's totally detached. He's so detached that he just wears skulls and sneers at it. He's just mocking those of us that are attached. And he hides his real glories, which shows another one of his qualities, that he's prideless. He carries the Ganga on his head, he destroys the universe. He can give liberation. I, Lord Brahma, am eager for liberation. But Lord Shiva, he bestows liberation. So later we're going to hear Lord Shiva says, this liberation which the Lord gave me the power to give is only one kind of liberation. That is this Sayuja Mukti, which the devotees of the Lord hate. What kind of benediction is that? What kind of receiving the mercy of the Lord is that? Anyway, Brahma is here saying, he and his wife, Uma, they can give liberation by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. Just see how much mercy he's receiving. And everyone on his planet is liberated. Now, what comes at the end of this chapter, the end of the Deva chapter, is hearing all these glories of Lord Shiva. Narada takes off. But just before he takes off, he's headed for Kailash. So we know, normally, that's the residence of Lord Shiva's Mount Kailash. But Brahma says, don't go to Mount Kailash. Go to the other place where Lord Shiva resides, a place called Shivaloka. That place called Shivaloka is beyond the coverings of the universe. It's not in the Vaikuntha realm, but it's beyond the coverings of the universe where all the residents of Shivaloka are liberated souls. So those that receive this liberation that Shiva gives, that's the place they go. It's not in the material world, and it's not in the Vaikuntha region, but it's a place called Shivaloka. That's what's discussed in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And I want to read, if I can find the page somewhere. I don't think I have it. Maybe I do have it. Yeah, I do have it. A quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can look, take note of this, where this reference is, and read it later. It's intricate. Adi Lila chapter 6, text 79. I'm going to read Prabhupada's purport. This is from the Glories of Advaita Acharya, chapter 6. Purport. There are 11 expansions of Rudra or Shiva, and he gives their names. Generally, all these Rudras have 5 faces, 3 eyes, and 10 arms, each one of them. Now, there's another category of Shiva. There's going to be about 5 of them. The essence of this is, Shiva is variously manifest. So when you say Lord Shiva, you have to be specific. And generally, when we read in Mahabharata and different Puranas, that Lord Shiva that's being referred to is Lord Shiva in Mount Kailash. But Lord Shiva is variously manifested, as this purport indicates. Sometimes it is found that Rudra is compared to Brahma and is considered a living entity. Did you catch that, Acharya? Sometimes Shiva is a living entity. Generally that's not the case. Generally he's his own tattva, Shiva tattva. But when Rudra is explained to be a partial expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is compared to Shesha, who is Vishnu Tattva. And this is where Advaitacharya fits in. Lord Shiva is therefore simultaneously an expansion of Lord Vishnu, and in his capacity for annihilating the creation, one of the living entities. So the business of annihilation is performed by an expansion called Rudra that resides in the lower regions of this universe and does the business of annihilation. That's a jiva expansion of Rudra or Shiva. As an expansion of Lord Vishnu, he is called Hara. And he is transcendental to the material qualities. So that's the Shiva Loka personality, Lord Shiva or Hara, or Shambhu in Brahma Samhita terminology. But when he is in touch with Tamogun, he appears contaminated by the material modes of nature, and that's generally the Shiva that is identified in the Puranas. He whose consort is Uma or Durga or material nature, and thus is transformed, and that is Shiva Tattva. So he has various positions where he resides and different manifestations. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, it is stated that Lord Rudra is always associated with material nature when she is in the neutral, unmanifested state. In the Brahma Samhita, the relationship between Vishnu and Shiva is compared to that of milk and yogurt. Milk is covered, converted into yogurt by certain additives. So one is, they're the same, but they're different. They're the same, but they're different. Lord Shiva is an expansion of Lord Vishnu, yet because of his taking part in the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation, he is considered to be changed. So here's the second reference, this. When in contact with material nature for the purpose of creation, transformed. The second statement here is, for the purpose of annihilation, transformed milk into yogurt. So there is a position of Lord Shiva who is not doing either one of those two things, and that's this Shiva in Shiva Loka, known as Hara. Anyway. In the Vayu Purana, there is a description of Sada Shiva in one of the Vaikuntha planets. So beyond Shiva Loka is another manifestation in the Vaikuntha planets. Shiva Loka that we're going to hear about in Brihad Bhagavatamrita is not in the Vaikuntha region, but is yet is beyond the material creation. So in the Jyoti, in Brahma Jyoti. So in the Vayu Purana, Prabhupada is referring to this here. Sadashiva, one of the Vaikuntha planets, that Sadashiva is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form for pastimes. It is said that Sadashiva, or Lord Shambhu, is an expansion from the Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha planets, and thus is Lord Vishnu, and that his consort, Mahamaya, is an expansion of Ramadevi, or Lakshmi. Mahamaya is the origin or birthplace of material nature. So this Mahamaya that's being referred to here is not this Mahamaya we see out the window, but is the spiritual counterpart. Complex, isn't it? If your head is not spinning, maybe you didn't hear anything. It's a very complex subject matter. It is said amongst the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, there are two topics that are very, very difficult to understand. Most difficult to understand. And Shiva Tattva and Guru Tattva are very difficult topics to fully fathom and understand. Very, very deep subjects. Tattva in this sense meaning the truths about Lord Shiva. So Brahma directs Narada to go to that place, Shiva Loka. So there's Vaikuntha residence, Sadashiva. There's the Shiva Loka residence for Hara. There's the Kailash residence of Lord Shiva, who is in contact with Uma or Devi. There's the Rudra residences at the bottom of the universe where the destruction takes place. And he's also free to move here and there as he likes. And there are different manifestations accordingly in those different locations. So as Narada leaves Brahmaloka, I'm skipping some details, but as he leaves Brahmaloka, heading for Shivaloka, he's singing on his veena, Shiva Krishna, Shiva Krishna. So he's in that mood, the non-difference mood. And when he reaches Shivaloka, he finds, I think I have to stop because of the time, he finds Lord Shiva worshipping Lord Sankarshan, and in a very similar manner, very, even more so than before, opulent worship with persons who are perfected souls, mind you. They're not just good devotees, very pious. They're beyond, as their master is, so they become, beyond the modes of material nature. And their worship is in pure devotion. And that's the scene that opens the chapter 3. Finish 2 chapters out of 7. So chapter 3 begins with that region which is beyond the modes of nature, but not yet in the Vaikuntha realm. And so this evening, this is the prelude, stay tuned for this evening's discussion on that region of Shivaloka, beyond the modes of nature, what Narada experiences there, and what Lord Shiva has to say about his own lack of qualification or disqualification. And then he in turn refers to the residents of Vaikuntha as the true recipients of the Lord's mercy. And as I mentioned, the consort of Lord Shiva then says that he should, that Narada should especially go see Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. And Lord Shiva corrects her and says, actually, the intimacy, as we know from the Prahlad Maharaj story, even Lakshmi was unable to approach Lord Nrisimhadeva, but Prahlad was able to approach Lord Nrisimhadeva. He has even greater intimacy. Go find Prahlad. And then tomorrow morning it's Prahlad Maharaj. That's what I'm waiting for. The residents of Vaikuntha, Prahlad and Hanuman. And then it just keeps going from there. 3 more chapters after that. It gets really ecstatic. For another retreat we can cover that. Okay, so any comments or questions? Acharya?
I've heard it described, and I think it comes from Srila Prabhupada, but I don't have the reference now. But 3 different kinds of devotees of Lord Shiva, being demons, impersonalists, and Vaishnavas.
Yeah, sure.
I just thought that there's a nice symmetry between those 3 kinds of followers and the Rudra,
Shambhu and Sadashiva, yeah.
The
demons
being following the manifestation of the material world, the impersonalists, Shambhu is outside the universe, they're not invited, but the Vaishnava is following Lord Shiva.
Yeah. Thank you for coming.
Following Sadashiva.
Yeah. So, when we, just to comment on your comment, when we're dealing, well, 2 things. When we're dealing with persons who are worshippers of Shiva, our acharyas recommend, and our experience also tells us, we should be very careful. We should be very careful that we don't make offense and we don't offend them. Both. Sensibilities in this area are very delicate. Generally, the conception that people have is blurred. It's not distinct. Generally, it's something like impersonalism. Although there's acknowledgement of Lord Shiva as a person, it's something a little bit like in Christianity, where very clearly God is a person, somehow he has no face, he has no form. So those who are worshippers of Lord Shiva identify that he has a form, he has a face, but he's equal and independent from Krishna. So there's multiple lords of equal, and this is the area that we're sensitive to as Vaishnavas. We'll discuss this evening. in more depth. Any other comments or questions? Yeah? For the sake of the people in the kitchen, he wants you to speak into the microphone. Speak into the microphone. He annihilates indirectly. He annihilates by his taking rest. So there's a partial annihilation. And at the end of his life, there's a total annihilation. So on the strength of what he does, annihilation takes place. That's the statement. He does the work, but it's on the strength of what Brahma does and doesn't do, whether he destroys or doesn't destroy. Yeah. It's like if I have a what Brahma does determines annihilation. That's the understanding. Okay. Yes, Krishna Smarana.
So, obviously Lord Brahma must be having appreciation of people who are Vaikuntha.
Sure.
And he must be realizing their greatness even compared to
sure. Why doesn't he speak about the Vaikuntha residents? Yeah. For that matter, why doesn't he just get right
yeah.
right to, you know, residents of Vrindavan? He saw it. it's part of the drama. It's to help us, just like what, you know, what we're doing. Why are we wasting our time talking about the devas? Let's just get right down to the business. And 10th canto. So he's assisting to our edification. Something like you could say, why is Arjuna lamenting in the way that he was? He's an eternal associate of Krishna. You know, get it together. But he's being influenced by the Supreme Lord to conduct himself in that way for our edification. Much like Arjuna.
Isn't it also true that his personal appreciation is for someone who is immediately according to his own realization is appreciating?
He's not lacking in realization. He's playing a certain role. The Prabhupada explains in this way. You've heard this example before. When a teacher who's showing a student how to write Sanskrit letters holds the pen and holds the hand of the student and moves the pen, he's not a student. He's doing the same thing that the student needs to learn how to do. But he's showing the student. So Narada like that is doing. He's showing us how we can traverse stages of understanding so that there's no residual doubt remaining. We can come to that higher position with clarity. As I explained in the very first class, one can right away just say, the gopis are the highest recipients of the group, but we'll have a material conception of what that means. We'll have an incomplete understanding and conception. And either reject it or imagine it, but not be prepared to fully embrace that. So these other steps are there for clearing away, and he's assisting us in learning those little lessons, the transit lounge lessons. Yeah? Still something?
Yeah, from our perspective, it's clear. The actual unfolding of events that's being described. These are actual events, they're not just...
Yeah, they're actual events.
So, from that perspective of the Brahma, it is actually been implicit when we say that without actually meaning it completely. So he's saying one thing to teach us that he's having some other realization in his heart.
The leelas, the actions performed by exalted devotees are to assist the Lord in his service. So one could consider, is Brahma knowing the Lord's purpose, and knowing the Lord's purpose, he then directs Narada to Lord Shiva, because he knows this is going to be narrated in Gita Nagari many thousands of years later. He is very knowledgeable, you know. Or is it that Brahma, being a devotee of the Lord, is simply taking indication from the Lord how to speak, how to act, and he just, whether he knows what's going to happen in Gita Nagari later or not, he's just, by the influence of Yoga Maya, conducting himself in that way. And it really doesn't matter. One can... We're not getting some disclosure from our acharyas, so it's not so relevant to know this way or that way. In any case, he's acting as a dramatist in the Lord's, in extolling the glories of the Lord. So that those of us who are less fortunate, we're not elevated like Brahma is or Narada is, they're showing us in this enactment of some scene how to really appreciate the position of the gopis. Beyond, we've heard it so many times, more deeply to appreciate. They're helping us in that way by the Lord's arrangement. Anything else? Yes? Giri Govardhan?
In the beginning of the class, you were speaking about how these personalities reflect on their own significance, consider that they're receiving no mercy of the Lord. So for beginners in cultivating devotion and appreciation for the Lord and his devotees, is there a place, and what role does it play for us to acknowledge mercy that we're receiving?
Is the question clear? Everyone heard it? Okay, so there's an example. I'm forgetting right now the personality in Ramanujacharya's life, Krishna Smana, maybe you can remember. Is it Govinda? Who, on one occasion, the devotees would offer praise, and he would say that praise is not sufficient. Govinda? Okay. Huh? Govinda. And this kept happening again and again and again and again. And finally, Ramanujacharya became very upset because his very confidential servant is exhibiting this arrogance. So he went and chastised him. And demanded an explanation for his conduct. So Govinda gave an explanation. And the explanation was that when I hear persons praise whatever it is that I have received, whatever opulence and greatness I have, I'm thinking, this is all due to you. And I think that's insufficient. And I criticize them. You've not glorified me enough. So, this is like, you know, what's happening here is like the achinja beta beta tattva part. One can look at the non-difference, one can look at the difference. And there's simultaneously both, and that's the whole picture. Simultaneous one in, oneness and difference of all things with the Supreme Lord. So in a matter of humility, one can say, I'm receiving no mercy. That's one side of it. And I read those statements yesterday where Gopi had written, actually, certainly the devotee is receiving mercy. And how much mercy? We can make a long inventory list of the things that are due to no qualification from our side, but mercy is pouring into our life. It's all because of the merciful Supreme Lord. Like the song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you examine me, you'll find in me no good qualities. But if you find any good qualities, know for certain my spiritual master had put those good qualities there. In that way, that's the other side. There's the, I'm receiving no mercy. And if there is anything that you find that's good, it's entirely mercy. But the emphasis in this case is over on this side. Abject denial that I have any qualification to receive any mercy. I'm skipping some details. In some cases, Sanatana Goswami points out that some of the glories that are being recognized are not addressed by the person who's refuting, because they are actual glories. He just doesn't address them, but he addresses the other things and points out shortcomings. Especially at the beginning, the opulences are material, but then there are other things that are spiritual, which are the detachment. Because if one is not spiritually qualified, when opulences are there, worldly opulences, one becomes detached. But these glorifications are, you're completely detached. And you're dedicating those opulences to the furtherance of pure devotion. And then there's the glorifications that one is able to do that on a greater scale. And this is, so it's in increments, it just expands like that as we go along. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Śrī Brihat Bhagavatamrita ki.